Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm super excited today to welcome a very special guest, Dr. Mike Walker, to the show. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Travis. Been a big fan for a long time, and I'm excited to get talking about everything that we've done in the past almost 10 years.
I know. I can't believe it's been this long. I'm glad I'm still alive. Glad you are. Glad we're both kicking. I mean, I just thought this was just an amazing email that I got from you a few weeks ago. And it was just the kind of thing that, like, if you have ever been a professional of any kind, you know, yourself or the listener, it's so special to get just random feedback from a customer or a client or a patient or whatever it is about the impact that you had on somebody's life. And it reminds you, like, of why you do what you do. And specifically, you've been so successful that I thought it would be really fun for our listeners to hear kind of where you were when we first met, like, 7 years ago. And just to kind of help them be inspired as student loan borrowers about what is possible in their own lives. We were talking offline, but you said that your goal is to smash limiting beliefs. So maybe you could share kind of who you are, and then I want to kind of take people, when their mouths are, you know, off the floor, I want to take people back in time and talk about, like, when you weren't this super successful veterinarian and everything that's happened, and just sort of talk through that journey and help the person listening be inspired. So yeah, who is Mike Walker? Share a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, back in 2017, I graduated from veterinary school here in Texas at Texas A&M. And I always knew what I wanted to do. I always had this idea of my goals professionally that I wanted to achieve. Yeah, so I had this goal in mind when I started vet school. It's like, I want to be a business owner in 3 to 5 years post-graduation. Going into vet school, like most vet students, I didn't really know anything about the student loan side. I was like, yeah, it's there. We'll deal with it later down the road, not really kind of taking into account. So when I graduated, I really kind of looked at this debt that I had at that time. And I was like, okay, let's just smash this. Let's get this done in 3 or 4 years. But I also want to be an owner. And so I kind of waffled for about 6 months. And my goal started to shift. And I set up an appointment with you. And I sat down and said, hey, Travis, I want to be a practice owner, I want to pay off my debt. And you just straight up said, no, you can't. So I was kind of taken aback when you said that to me. And I was like, what do you mean? You're like, we can't do both. You have to choose, right? If we want to do this smart the right way. And I can be honest and say that you probably shaved off like close to 5 to 10 years out of my professional career, doing some intense planning on your end, really only over about an hour, enabled me to open a practice and build a practice from the ground up within 4 years of graduating vet school. And now we're about 3 years into it. We're about 3 weeks away from opening our second practice. And it's been a wild ride. And I can firmly say that that one conversation was probably one of the most pivotal early career conversations I had, because it set me on the right path to get where I am. And we can kind of delve into that more. But yeah, so I opened this clinic, and my mission is to build a clinic every about 18 months, expand out our brand. And its purpose is just to enrich every life that walks into our doors. And so we've been very successful so far, and through some ups and downs, but I owe a lot of it to you, Travis, to be honest with you. And I still have student debt, and we can talk about that too, you know?
So just for the shock value a little bit, yeah, we don't have to necessarily get into specific numbers, but, you know, if you had your practices, whatever, you know, everything combined, and we don't have to share if it's just you owning it or partners or whatever, but if we have that business that you've built along with your team be sold in the open market today, what do you think that business would be worth, let's say?
Yeah, and I'm 100% owner. I took on all the debt myself and everything. And at the current market where we're at, we're a little bit down from where COVID was, but I could sell probably between $4 to $5 million if I really wanted to. That's not in my plans right now. I'm having too much fun building it, but it's just kind of mind-boggling to me if you plan right, what you can actually achieve. I mean, we're going to celebrate our 3-year anniversary at Apollo here in a few months. So we're not even 3 years old, and it's been kind of fun. So it's really opened my eyes about what's possible out there, which nobody talked about in vet school or previously.
So, like, effectively, if you had paid down your debt, right, if you hadn't listened to me, if you had just done what you thought that everybody told you what you're supposed to do, you would be where, do you think, right now?
I would probably be paying a lot of catch up. I probably could have paid off my debt within about 5 years of graduation, but then it would have taken me another few years to get back up the funds to then come to the bank. Because one thing that was so eye-opening, and nobody told this to me until I talked to you, that they have to see certain parameters on your financial side of it. So when I graduated vet school, I worked two jobs. I worked during the week, my regular job. On the weekends, I worked at another part-time gig, and I was throwing like $3,000 to $4,000 towards my student loan, trying to get them knocked down. I had maybe like 10 to 15 in savings or something like that, but then I would kind of just dump it into my student loans. I graduated probably with about 145,000 in student loans. And the conversation that we had, and I had that goal of that 3 to 5 year, you're like, well, you can't do both. And we started to expand on that and said, well, look, the banks are going to want to see a certain amount of liquidity in there, right? And so, you know, you need to start focusing. If you really want to be an owner in 3 to 5 years, you need to start stockpiling cash. Let's try to get a better interest rate on your loans. I think we refinanced out and got my interest down. And my next, I think, 18 months were focused on getting that stockpile of cash. And, you know, it's so interesting, especially you deal with a lot of professionals, doctors, vets. There are a lot of interesting doors that can get open to us because we're very lendable people, I guess is the right term, according to the bank lines, as long as you stick to kind of certain parameters. And so I remember that time, I think I had got up to about 75,000 in savings about 3 years out or so. And I called the bank and I was like, look, I don't know what it means to start a clinic, but I'm just asking like what kind of equipment. This rep, it was so funny. I actually talked to a rep first. He's like, why don't you call the bank first? I was like, all right, cool. I called Bank of America. So I went with on the first time and, I was like, hey, I'm interested. I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't even know how this works. And they're like, well, we kind of just need to see three things. They're like, all right. They're like, all right, you need 3 years of experience. I was like, cool. I just passed the 3 year mark. You need like a 720 or higher credit score. Well, if you're paying your student loans, it's pretty easy to hit. And then you need about 74,000 in savings and liquidity. And I like checked my bank account. I was like, I have that too. And I kid you not, within 7 days, I had like $500,000 loan approved for me. And ready to go. And it was just so mind-boggling kind of and scary how easy it was. And so it really kind of opened my eyes. As long as you have good goals and kind of plan, you can get to where you want to be. It just depends on what your timeline is. You know, when I first graduated, I had no idea really what I was doing. I was floundering for about 6 months until I talked to you, paying off. And then we set out a really good financial plan to achieve my goals, not necessarily just stockpile a 401k, which I think sometimes gets people in traps, but yeah, that's how it was kind of done in my end.
That's pretty incredible. How did you hear about Student Loan Planner back in the day in 2017? It was a long time ago. Just curious if you remember.
I think I must have came across a blog post or something because I was just absorbing so much. There was so much information. I was like, okay, do I get disability? Do I do this? Do I, instead of paying off my loans, do I put it in a Roth and a 401k and stuff? And so then I saw that you had this niche of helping professionals. I was like, okay, cool. Well, now I kind of have a narrow field of focus because it was hard for me to relate to people giving financial advice to people that have no debt and aren't paying a mortgage rate on top of their other rent or mortgage. And so, I think it was a blog post or someone. Yeah, I started kind of reading all of your emails and was like, no, I'm just doing it. I think I stalked you for about 6 months before I set up an actual consultation.
Yeah. Back in the day, this was before the 2016 election. Facebook advertising was like the Wild West. You could like sell snake oil on Facebook and get super cheap ads. And so I sold, I did an ad with like just like veterinarians are treated horribly on student loan rules. And I just wrote the blog post on that and it went super viral. Like I think maybe half of all veterinarians saw this article. It was like really.
Probably is because I remember it was blogs I was reading.
Yeah. Like that was like back in the day, right? And then like the election happened. It was all the scandals and everything with like Russia maybe being involved in like, you know, disinformation on Facebook or whatever. And then like they started like clamping down so hardcore. I was basically never able to get anything approved on Facebook because the bots kept saying that I was a scam service or something. You know, I say that because like in business, a lot of times you need a lucky break. You don't have to have an amazingly lucky break. You just have to try and then something might work, right? So for me, it was a lot of these initial blog posts that got a reputation. And, you know, back in the day, like when we were working together, you were kind of joking with me before we started recording, like I was a little cheaper. I think it was pre like adding people to this team, even maybe it might have been just me.
One other guy there, one other guy or something.
Yeah. So it's funny because if people are listening to this, like they may be thinking like, oh, this is like impossible, right? I mean, maybe Mike, but you could talk about like, you know, how pivotal was it to get, you know, a low interest rate on your practice loan to be able to start like and have practice ownership like during COVID? Like, do you feel like that was a critical part of your success or do you think it just contributed or, you know, what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a mix of a bunch of things. I don't like market timing because it's impossible to time the market, in my opinion. I think you have opportunities that rise and you can run with it. I mean, I started my practice like kind of on the last wave of COVID. I mean, there was still up until like a year ago clinics that were doing curbside and stuff. You know, we had to deal and navigate that as a new business owner. Interest rates were nice. I will be honest, I've actually like refinanced out of those interest rates into higher ones, but that have enabled me to grow. And so I caution people to focus so hard on that stuff because you can get yourself into a mode of just paralysis, be like, ooh, okay, well, it's 7% interest rate now. Like, I'm going to wait half a year until it's 5 or so. But I think what's more important, and you kind of touched on it, and what you do is maybe find your niche. Maybe your niche will make up that difference and stuff. For example, I don't know how successful or what you could charge if you were just the CPA for everyone, but you've actually kind of developed and carved out a niche for professionals, and namely like doctors, and that enables you to give very specific type of experiences to people. That's very popular, right? And then you can start to increase your business that way too. And so, because you can sit there and analyze your way out of any deal, right? But at some point you do have to say like, okay, what sets me apart? You don't have to be, you know, an Elon Musk or anything like that, but you know, what sets me apart, and then just take the risk too. I mean, I always, especially professionals like dentists, veterinarians, we have a very good success rate, but bet on yourself, man. Like you spent 10 plus, 15 plus years of your life developing the skill, you know, go in on it. Because the other side of that is you don't, you're too scared. My biggest fear in life is I don't want to get to 67 years old and be like, I kind of wish I just went for it, you know? And that's kind of the thing I try to tell people, like, you know, the student loan talk, there's all that stuff. All the vet students are talking about it right now. But if you really kind of create a good plan and execute on that plan, but also just take a little bit of risk, you'll be so surprised how well you do. And not just financially, I'm just like as a leader too. A boss.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about that more. I mean, so you've got a great comment that you made there. I mean, if somebody's a pizza owner, right? Pizza shop owner, there's no barriers to entry. There's no special credentials you have to get to run that pizza shop, right? And so you can take out that loan, but you've got very high fixed expenses and you've got tons of competition. And if you make an amazing pizza, but it's kind of on the expensive side, then like suddenly you don't get good Google reviews, you're sunk. And like, so that's like only 20% of restaurants tend to survive 5 years in. But if you're what you do, what is required to be a veterinary practice owner in your state? Do you have to have any kind of, I mean, you obviously have to have a veterinarian degree,
yeah.
But is there any kind of extra restrictions?
Well, there's some states that don't require. But yeah, Texas is nice. We do have protection in that. So you have to be a veterinarian to own a veterinary practice. There are corporations that get around that by, you know, having some parent companies. There are some states, I think like Colorado, you don't need to be a vet. Anybody can open it. But the industry is a little bit weird. I think you have to kind of also know about it and be in it. I don't know how much of a following or how successful it would be if you just showed up and be like, I'm opening a vet clinic, now what, kind of thing. But yeah, thankfully, it's a little mixture of both. We have the protection on one side. But also, like sometimes veterinary medicine is the Wild West. Like, I don't have to deal with HIPAA. I don't have to deal with any kind of major insurance. Insurance is all handled on the consumer side of stuff. So I get to do whatever I want, which I love so much. We have created here a different experience here at our clinic where you don't have to leave your pet's side. So we have owners that watch surgery that are in the back. Like, when a patient gets triaged, they can hold, like, the oxygen. You know, I don't have any regulations over that. But we do it within our own internal safety net and stuff. Yeah, it's been so fun to sit there and build this business. And yeah, you stumble over yourself 1,000 times. I'm sure you have 100 stories of how you felt as like a boss, a leader, you know, decisions. But at the end of the day, like, it's on me and I still have the power to be flexible. And that's just been a huge thing for me.
That's awesome. I mean, for me, I think in some ways, what I do is easier. In some ways, what I do is harder. And everybody kind of thinks about kind of other situations where people have had advantages. And I think it sometimes holds people back to taking the chance on themselves. So what I mean by that is somebody might look at your situation and think like, well, I wasn't a practice owner during COVID where I had all this big boost in veterinary demand. That was like the best time ever, right? I didn't have low interest rates that I could use to get started with my business. And therefore, like, I shouldn't go out and start my own practice because I can't get access to those interest rates. You know what I mean? And so what I say about that is, like you said, I think so many people make bad decisions because of their debt. I think the debt kind of is this thing that traps people in fear. And like I said, you know, interest rates a lot of times drive really bad decisions. So like you were saying, you realize that, okay, this debt has a purpose. Like the purpose of the debt is not to have the lowest interest rate possible. It's, does this debt make sense to fund this business expansion plan that I have that makes sense to pursue, right? I guess I'll share a personal story, like buying a house. Man, I wish I had either delayed purchasing until after COVID when I had a higher inventory to choose from, you know, or I wish I had frankly increased the size of the house that I bought because of how many expensive updates that we did to it when it would have been way better just to increase our budget, right? I don't know, have you experienced situations where you feel like, maybe it's not you, but have you seen people make these decisions like based in their debt or based in kind of limiting beliefs that have held them back? And like, what would you say to somebody who's got some fear stopping them from taking some business ownership steps?
I think it boils down to like, it's the fear of the unknown, really. If they knew that they were going to be successful, or they would at least be, you know, potentially successful in this amount of time, like that interest rate conversation would go away. And so start thinking about the things that can take those fears away. So on my end, I had no idea how the financials of the business work. I still kind of don't. I hire a really good firm that takes care of all my bookkeeping, tax strategy, projections. We have monthly meetings that go over budgeting and everything. And so I have this team that's dedicated. They're kind of like my part-time CFOs is what I call them, and my therapist sometimes. But I sit there and I say, like, I want to expand in this market. We found this lease. Man, I got to take out like a $900,000 loan for this, but it's going to be like a 7.25 interest. Can we work this? And so we make projections for 5 years out. We say like, hey, look, okay, if we start doing this by month six, we should break even. Then here's when we're going to start making some money and stuff. And then I'm like, okay, cool. You know, we can do that. That's a whole different conversation than of just saying, oh my gosh, I have a $15,000 loan payment on a business and, you know, I got to make do with 50,000 in working capital. That sits there. You sit and chew on that. And it's just like the student loans, right? It's like, I have a 3-7% interest student loan. I have six figures. Like, who am I to say I could get a $500,000 loan to that? But you don't even know what you can do. And so I think that's what's really important. What you're doing too is limiting those fears and saying like, yeah, I get that. Like, I recognize it, but let's actually just put pen to paper, work through it. And then again, there's always that moment, that leap of faith that you got to do and believe in yourself. You're never going to be able to avoid that too. Yeah. And for my example, like I opened up in a really good interest rate environment. My $500,000 loan was, I think, 3.8%, but it was with a bank that was very, very conservative. And I am aggressive. I want to grow. I have a team to do it. But they wouldn't let me because it was too soon, just purely time-wise. And so I paid a $20,000 penalty fee to break out of that loan and switch from a 3.8 to 7.2, which I know some people on here will be like, you're an idiot. You're a horrible business guy. Like, whatever. We're still cash flowing and making money. And now it's enabled me to level up in the business and keep going. So again, it's like, as you get in it, your benchmark for fear changes and your perspective changes. And you're like, okay, I'm believing in myself more. Like, get those small wins, but get that information so you can get those wins. And that's why it's like surround your people like Travis Hornsby, you know, good bookkeeping, good financial planner, good CFP to help you. Don't all try to do it yourself. That's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, so I guess part of my thinking is you talked about the benefit of niching. And I think a lot of people get overwhelmed by all these little decisions that have to happen. But I like to point people back to like the big decisions. So, like, you came to me thinking, okay, you know, what specifically do I need to do, you know, to pay down my loans? Like you said, 3 to 4 years, right? But it's kind of like you located your practice in an area with above average incomes, I think, right? You did probably some sort of study to think through, like, is the area you're going to put your practice in like a good area economically to be in terms of competition, I assume?
Yeah. I like growth markets. We've been very fortunate in the Central Texas area around Austin, just really high growth everywhere, right? And so, but there's pockets of that around the U.S. You know, we have Charlottesville and, you know, South Carolina and all that stuff. And so I like these outskirts kind of family areas that are really growing. Everyone's wanting to come to it, but they can't afford downtown, so they move out, you know, around those areas. But you can replicate that across the U.S., right? And so I was like, okay, I want to grow with the community with them. I want to offer experience that's probably a little bit different than what they've experienced before. But I'll be frankly honest with you, man. I opened in a tiny town. If you look at the census, I think it's like 6,000 people. It's probably a little bit more surrounding like the ETJs around it, with three other established practices in this town. And we cash flow positive our first month out of the gate just because of like how we presented ourselves and offered a little bit unique of an experience for our clients. So And I've talked to some younger vets where they're like, okay, here's my 30-page business plan. Here's my projections I've done. Here's all the studies I've done. I have these 20 properties that I'm doing analysis. I heard that population has to be 10,000 people per veterinarian in the community to support it. And I look at them, I'm like, man, you're way ahead of like where I was at that time. You know, there is a little bit of a gut feeling, but if you kind of put some parameters around that and set yourself up for success, then, you know, you can do it. But it kind of just goes back to, it's like, kind of, what's your difference maker? Like, it's not good enough for me just to open up a business that's the exact same down the road. You know, essentially, we're all practicing very similar medicine. So for me, what else is going to set us apart? But that can be anywhere you work, even if you're an associate. What's going to set yourself apart from it, like the other associates? Is it that you got advanced dental training or ultrasound training? Now you could be the go-to in your town or go-to in your practice. So that's kind of where I always try to lead people. Like, think outside the box a little bit.
Well, you mentioned Elon Musk in the beginning of the interview. And I think that what's interesting about that is so many people compare themselves to others in a way that's not helpful. So if your comparison point is Elon Musk, okay, there's a 0% chance that any of us are going to be billionaires. I don't know, maybe you might, but you know, very low chance that any of us are going to be billionaires, like comparable to one of the richest people in the world. And also, frankly, if you look at the lives, like the private lives of some of the richest people in the world, it's probably not something you might want. And you know, some people might, listening to this might say, oh my gosh, like multi-million-dollar practice valuations, like high aggressive growth investing in a business, like that scares me. And I think a lot of people like need to stop and think, well, what does success look like to you? You know, if you're going for just a nice lifestyle, I mean, you can work 3 days a week, make a couple hundred thousand a year, having a lifestyle practice that you really enjoy, and you just acquire it from somebody. Like one of my favorite stories that's in the dental space, just to share with you, and you might find this interesting, is this guy came out of school, and like you, he had a hard time qualifying. Well, he knew about a loophole through SBA, Small Business Administration, so you can get around some of those requirements for conventional lenders with a higher loan processing fee, even without much experience. So he went through Small Business Administration loan, which is a special like government program that you can get access to, and he did that to be able to buy a practice like right out of school, immediately out of school. This was even too aggressive for me. You know, I was like, whoa, you know, I can't take credit for this. But the interesting part about it is he looked for a practice that was just that he could do new procedures in. So you went the path of a startup, I think, right? Is that what you did?
Yeah. And I never thought I would at all. I always thought I'd buy a practice. But that, I guess, market did kind of play a huge part in my decision to do a startup, because back in 2020, when I really started to look at becoming an owner, valuations were so high. People were getting 10x for their businesses and stuff. And what was available for me to buy to even be competitive against corporations was really bad clinics, really old clinics that need a ton of work. I had to probably like redo the whole staff and stuff, and I have to pay a premium for it. Or I could take like maybe a fourth of that amount and build my own thing. It's choose your heart, right? There's multiple ways to go about this. What I think is interesting too, it's like, there's going to be a really golden opportunity over the next 5 to 10 years for young professionals, veterinarians, and dentists that see these practices, maybe one, maybe up to two doctor practices that aren't actually what the corporations are looking for. Corporates are really looking for 3, 4, 5 doctor practices. They don't want to buy a practice that's solely dependent on the owner, and then that owner retires and leave, then they're left kind of with their hands empty. And so there's going to be this really interesting opportunity, and it's already starting to happen, where these guys are getting to their retirement age and they don't have a good exit plan. They can't sell their corporate because they don't have an attractive practice for that. But there is a really good opportunity to come in as an independent owner, say, okay, you've been doing surgery one day a week, kind of aren't really, you're leaving at 3 or 4 every day. Like, we can come in, expand hours, expand services, and immediately start to ramp this up. So if my strategy was to open this practice and this was my practice for the next 40 years, it would be completely different from what I'm doing now. And that's why it's like, my story is my own. It's not the right or wrong way to do it, but I've always dreamed of opening a multi-location practice, and the decisions I make are based on that. The decision I'd make if I wanted just a lifestyle practice here for the next 4 years would be completely different. So yeah, there's true validity to that.
So I don't want to just soapbox this, because people don't want to hear the Travis soapbox. They want to hear your success stories. But Mike, how many times have you seen doctors be like, I want to get into short-term rentals, I want to get into crypto, I want to get into, you know, fill it in, AI investing, or, you know, I want to do some random side hustle thing. And yet people are sitting on this gold mine of their education that they borrowed six figures for, that in a lot of cases there's regulations to prevent competition from like certain types of competitors in states, right? All people have to do, like you said, is bet on themselves like you did. And, you know, it might not be a, you know, multi-million dollar practice, or it could be actually, you know, but I just think it's crazy how many times, I tell you, I've seen probably hundreds of situations like this where people were investing in something for like either entertainment or because they thought it was a good investment, when like, by the way, they're making, you know, double the average associate income because they're such a good producer, or they own their own one practice and they're just absolutely crushing it with very little effort compared to a lot of people. And it's like, do you realize that you're your own personal gold mine? Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, so, and I guess talk about these limiting beliefs, right? Because, I mean, I have them, you know, in terms of I'm not enough. I can't do this. I don't deserve this. I don't want to feel greedy when I'm asking somebody to pay me for my services.
Or I don't know how to run a business or something.
Yeah, I'm not a business person. I need to go back and take business classes first. Like, what would you say to somebody that's struggling with some of those feelings? Maybe you've struggled with some of those feelings. How did you overcome those? And what would you say to somebody?
Well, I want to go back to in a little bit what you just said about side hustles, because I think that's a funny conversation, because I've kind of developed over time a different or a opinion on that too. But yeah, I think what ultimately comes down to on the limiting beliefs, and my field is veterinary medicine. I don't know how the dentists go or the MDs are going right now. I graduated and I remember I got a salary at like $85,000, no commission or anything. And that was like huge at that time. I was like, wow, I'm a badass. Now new grads are getting like $120,000, $150,000 a year in the veterinary world. And that's good money, but they're also having decent debt. And so I sit there and I talk to a bunch of students and new grads and I go, okay, let's play this out, right? Let's talk about worst case scenario for Mike Walker. I bet on myself. I take out a $500,000 loan or whatever it is. I open my doors. I get zero customers and I go default on my loan. What happens next? Like realistically, there's probably going to be two or three things that happen. Bank's going to foreclose on me, take everything I have. I'm going to have to go bankrupt, right? My credit score is going to get whacked. My ego will get hurt pretty dang bad. But in our market right now, I can still go the next Monday and probably land a six-figure job. Now, granted, like I don't have kids and stuff too, and this may be a different situation and stuff for people that have family, but we have these professions that are so protected too that you have a good safety net if you are a good candidate, be it a dentist or an MD or a veterinarian. You have really good options to go back on. So my whole thing is why would you not go for that? Or at least like partially, there's so many different deals as far as like partnering, you know, not just doing it solo and stuff too. So I recognize the limiting beliefs, but also look at the worst case scenario, because it's really, if you look at the grand scheme of, you know, even just citizens of the US, like we're in a very, very good spot, a very fortunate spot to be in. Look, I did not get anything handed. Like I graduated with, I think about $1,200 in my bank account, $144 debt, and kind of just started making money and throwing it places until I talked to you. And so I want to make sure people are like, oh, you just handed this stuff. No, you can make these decisions and do it yourself and not have support from anybody else. It's definitely possible.
Yeah. I mean, that's so interesting to think about. You know, I mean, I guess another thing is like all those people that got pets during COVID. I mean, you're not going to go euthanize your two-year-old dog that you kind of maybe think, oh, maybe I wouldn't have gotten that dog had we not been in a global pandemic, right? So I guess the next 10 years, people are going to have to take care of all those pets they got during the pandemic, kind of no matter what, right?
Yeah. And I was told something before I opened, because I had some good mentors, and that's the one thing, get some good mentors in your industry, right, that have gone through it. And so before I opened my practice, I was taking some mentors out to happy hour and just being like, how did you sign this contract? And none of them would tell me what to do. They're just like, well, this is what we did and this is how it worked out. I'm like, cool. And so I learned many different things. But one of the, and I do think I kind of compare the vet world to the dentist world pretty commonly, besides like the insurance. You know, a lot of it is disposable income and, you know, creating practices and concierge practices too, or kind of what it's going to. And it was so funny because I was talking to two of my really good mentors in Austin here. And they're like, look, Mike, as long as you're just like a decent person and you treat people right, like you'll get clients. And I was like, that's not good enough. I'm like, no way. And that's one of our huge focuses, our client experience when we open. And I have to say, like in the medical field, the client experience and the customer experience is very, very low bar. You think about it, you get in there, You walk in, there's a reception of 3 to 4 people. They're all on the phone. They're kind of pissed off. They're like, wait, please. Like, I'll get you in a second. You're like, okay, this is awkward. You like sit down in a cold crammed room in a vet world. There's a wall of food over there. You're like, kind of smells like pee and poop. Like, okay, I'm gonna go in the room. You sit in there, your dog gets taken in the back. You don't know what happened. They come back in, your bill's $400 and you leave and you're like, that kind of sucked. And I'm like, can we even change one or two? Or if we can change 3 or 4 aspects of that, like you will be light years ahead of your competition. You know, you see these cool dentist office with the TV up on the ceiling and stuff. You know, there's so many little things that aren't that expensive that you can do just to treat people a little bit differently. I think it really resonates, especially in an age kind of like where people are getting so impersonal with each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a great point. Don't underestimate what you can do just by having a really good reputation and just building on that. And like you said, doing a couple things like a little better, like, and especially in the professions that you're in and our listeners are often in, like we said, you have some level of built-in demand for your services because of the profession that you're in. It's not like there is zero demand for veterinary services in a particular area that you're going to set up. And so that's what I love about that comment, right? Is just, you will get people. And if you don't, then like, be willing to fail. That's another thing I tell our team a lot of the time is like the thing that is the most dangerous to a business is just people that are not willing to fail. And so then you just do nothing. I mean, we've been in situations where we've had like people had a debate in our team about fairly minor business thing for like a few weeks. And I'm like, guys,
just try it.
Try it. If you fail, that's fine. I won't be mad if you fail. I'll be mad if you don't do something. So I think there's a lot of times that people are really, they truly are like afraid to take action. And I think that that's something that will make somebody way higher probability of success. I mean, like you said, like the downside risk, like that was definitely my attitude as a bond trader. It's why I think maybe if I've been able to encourage people like yourself to just bet on themselves, it's one of the reasons I kind of push that so much is like you said, if you take out your startup loan, $500K and you default. So I think that the time frame is about 7 years where you would not be able to get another practice loan. And during that 7 years, you could go out and get a good paying job and build up your savings again. And the thing is what do most people do, right? They take the 5 years to pay off their student loans, get everything locked down with their personal house, their family circumstances, et cetera. And then they go take out, instead of a practice or startup loan, they take out the acquisition loan. You know, you're either taking on, like you said, a loan with some issues, like practice, you're going to have to rebuild, it's going to be difficult, or you're competing with private equity that's specifically willing to pay huge multiples for large practices that are already set up pretty well. And so is it smart to go do that startup like you did before you have kids, before you have responsibilities of a family and all that kind of stuff? And when you have like low expenses, like is that low risk or is it low risk to go take on an acquisition loan for like a way higher amount of money for a practice that has issues with it 10 years after that when you've not built up equity in a practice, not grown as a business owner and learned from your mistakes? You know what I mean? Like I think a lot of people get so wrong-headed about what risk is. A lot of times the biggest risk is not doing something. Sometimes inaction can be a far bigger risk than actually taking action. And like what I tell our startup people is like have 1 year of expenses in the bank in cash. Do not expect success in the first month. Give yourself a 3-year runway. And if necessary to hit that 3-year runway, be willing to take on some extra kind of like ad hoc shifts and other practices just to be able to kind of pay the bills and extend that cash runway. And, you know, I don't think I've ever had somebody come back and tell me that they regretted it. I think of the thousands of people I've talked to, I've only actually had one person, if you can imagine, that defaulted on a practice loan.
There's usually some big issues going on.
Yeah, like the plumbing in the building was faulty, and then they came to their practice one day and it was entirely flooded. So,
oh gosh, yeah. Well, and then again, like you have business insurance for that too.
Well, you did. Well, this guy, I think, had the wrong kind of car. Like, so
oh, no.
That was the disaster. Well, the good news is, like, he was able to, like, sue the person that he bought the building from, like, for non-disclosure. I don't know. Like, and so they came to some sort of settlement. It took a while. I don't know. I mean, he actually worked it out where he was able to get a new loan, I think in only a couple years, just by like working with the bank, trying to like catch up some payments. You know what I mean? So they were able to take that off of some of that negative credit reporting. And
well, and it's good. And it's like, yeah, have people in your corner too. Like we carry about 3 to 4 months of expenses in the clinic now and stuff. And I talked to my buddy too. He's like, dude, it's a cool deal. I mean, if your building burns down, you'll have 6 months off, but you'll build it and your clients will come back. You know, you'll lose some and stuff. So, you know, there's still like a lot of not too bad worst case scenarios. But, you know, it always goes back to kind of what you said, like choose your hard, like startup versus acquisition. That's a purely personal decision, what you got to do. And I will tell you, I like bootstrapped the heck out of this to the point it was a little bit too extreme probably in the beginning, but I was not going to fail. And I probably went way too hard, way too fast, but hindsight's 20/20. But Alex Ramosi is a business dude and he has just good hindsight. So I listen to a lot of his podcasts and one of my favorite things for him, he just says short-term sacrifice plus like consistent hard work equals inevitable success. If you just do the work for long enough and are willing to take some pain for a little bit, it'll come. It'll really come. You know, depending on what that looks like is up to you. When I talk to vet students, you're already doing the first part of that. So you know that you're sacrificing 4 years of your life, or if you're a dentist, 4 or going on to residency, you're sacrificing this income, you're putting in the work, you're already living this delayed gratification already. So it's the same thing. You know, if you want to do a career, then do an acquisition later, or, you know, again, I was a little extreme. I started my business, put an RV in the back of it and lived rent free for the first like 2 years of it. So it didn't take a paycheck for 8 or 9 months.
So that is kind of hard to do with kids and a spouse.
It is,
right?
It is. I could have done it elsewhere, but like that was just what worked for me, you know, and enabled me to grow. I always, because again, I had no like other expenses besides my debt, but for specific scenario of mine, I wanted to grow fast. So I had always these forks in the road. I could hire an associate or I could start to pay myself. And I would look at it and be like, okay, well, you know, that's going to be a better ROI. And right now I really don't need the money or anything like that. But again, that was my specific scenario too. It's not going to be for everybody else.
Be willing to be creative. Like a big part of what I love about the student loan consults is it just encourages people to be creative in their own personal lives, right? The easy path is to say, debt's evil. You got to pay it off immediately. House on fire, go pay it off, right? But it's kind of like, well, what is the best return for your limited time on earth and your money? And for you, you had all this desire to be a practice owner. It was a big thing that was coming from your internal motivation, right? And all I did was give you permission to bet on yourself, right? And like, you know, the mechanics. I mean, so maybe you can share about that. Like, where were you at before, after that consult? Like, what, why do you feel like it was a big pivotal moment? Like, what would you say?
Well, there was no information out there. And you literally just said like, hey, if you want to do this big goal, which was the goal of ownership outweighed the paying off of student loans, you know, quick. And so you're like, this is what they want. Nobody was telling me like, this is how you get the money to be able to acquire or start a business. And so it completely like did a 180, you know, started aggressively saving down. So it was the unknown, right? I was sitting there for the first 6 months with the fear of like, okay, I want to do this, but I don't really know how to do it. But okay, I'm just going to throw in money in the student loan. And so I just didn't know. And that's why I just was such a huge first lesson in my career of saying like, you don't have to know. It's okay to like talk to somebody or pay for that. Do not try to do your own legal stuff as a business owner, you know, hire a lawyer, basic things like that. But student loans, we're talking 6 figures. Like there's some vet students that are coming out with $500,000, which is a whole other conversation. Don't try to just guesswork that through. That is serious money and it seriously is going to affect your life. So hire somebody and work through that. And that's where you came up beautifully. But you mentioned it again, the kind of like, you know, what's your time worth? My beginning of career, I was very like frugal and I was taking all those side gigs and side hustles, trying to make a couple extra $100 here. But I don't know if you've seen this in your business, but as you get going and you start to become a little bit more successful making money in your business, you know, like, yeah, I could go do that job over there and earn like $500 or so, but that's going to take like 8 hours of my time. Like I get a way better ROI now building my business with that time too. So it's funny how your mind, as you get older and into your career, switches to, I will trip over that $200 job over there, or like I can flip that or something to build my business, which is going to have a huge ROI. And that's it. Personally, for me, I held off investing for probably about like 5 to 6 years or so because it was all focused on it. And I have no regrets because the ROI has been amazing on that. But now I'm at a point where, okay, I need to start diversifying a little bit and going back and investing. But, you know, that was just where I was in the time. And I knew if I betted on this, my ROI would be much higher than if I just put it in an index fund and got like 8%.
Yeah. But I will say, so one kind of personal story is it is also okay to not prioritize growth. And at times in my business journey, like I've definitely been thinking grow, grow, grow. But at times, like the most stressed I've been is when we have 1,000 consults in a month, and I'm trying to navigate making sure the quality of all those is really good, and we bring on people really fast. But you know, sometimes it's like when you bring on people too fast, we try to grow too fast, expand too much. Sometimes like the right decision as a business owner is to figure out like, what is your why? What is your enough? What is your end goal, right? So the great thing about your business is, like you said, if you ever do decide, hey, I want to do something different in my life, like you built a business that is super attractive to be acquired by a big corporate entity where you could do anything you want to do. For me, I think that my priorities have shifted from like grow to, now that I've made plenty of money for what I need, it's more about like, is this fun? Does this reduce my stress level? Does this make me happy? Is this like something that's relaxing or not? I don't know if you've experienced a shift like that at all in your business. I mean, you're still in growth mode, but adding a second practice. But how do you think about what is your why? What is enough?
Yeah. And like, to give you some perspective too, on a tangent, like, I don't know if you see it, the first 2 years in business suck. You're learning how to be a boss. You're learning how to like grow and lead and talk to people and hire and all that. And you just got to stumble through it. But about a year and a half in, I got approached by a VC firm. They saw what we're doing, got connected, and these guys flew in their jet and they were like, we want to, you know, acquire Apollo and invest like $15 million into it. We want to open 5 a year. And it was like really cool and flashy and like really kind of, I entertained it for a little bit. But then I got into it and realized like, these guys have no idea about our business. They want to open 5 a year. Like, it's hard to even find one vet. And that's 15 vets we need to do to hit their numbers and stuff too. And it really kind of opened my eyes, and the whole deal just like fell apart and dissolved. Everyone's going to be really mad in about a year when we're not doing the numbers we need to. And you're now answering to investors. And so, you know, my biggest why now is like, how do we create a really cool business culture that exudes out towards our clients and our team members, not just the clients? Like, it's a fun place to work, to get fulfillment. We're doing things a little bit differently. And really what it's come down to is like, probably the past 12 months have been the most pivotal to find my why. It's like, okay, we are truly doing something that people are responding to in our industry now. So I will grow it as fast as I can, as long as we maintain that, is what I tell my team. So the reason I choose about 18 to 20 months of growth is that's the timeline that through a bank, I can get these loans without bringing on investors. Because the moment I bring on investors, we actually talked about this at our team meeting this morning, you know, and I was very frank. I was like, look, guys, we're trying to build something that's not commonly done in independent practice ownership. Like, corporations and PE firms are doing this. With that being said, I'm figuring out as we go, we got a really good leadership team, but if this was a corporation, we would be taking orders from C-level people that have never stepped foot in a practice, or tech guys that just look at us like a data component. So, you know, for us, it's like, I will grow, but I have the ability and I have the power too to say like, hey, we're starting to go off track. Our culture's gone to crap. Like, clients are now becoming unhappy. Like, let's stop and figure this out. And so for me, it's like, I will grow. We call it our Apollo way. So as long as we're always following our Apollo way. And you talk about like growing with people, making sure the quality's there and the decisions. For us, we really delve into our values. And I tell the team, like, look, if I'm not here and you have to make a decision, as long as it's in the lens of our values and how we want to treat people, it'll never be the wrong decision. If it doesn't have a good outcome, we'll talk about it, and learn and move on too. But we have to empower people to do that. So that's kind of where we're at in our lives. This morning, I said, who we'll be in a year is going to be a completely different business too. And we have to be okay with that. But as long as we do it with our values, then that's the most important thing to me now.
So I think a lot of people are going to listen to this and think, oh my gosh, this guy's so put together. He's so on the ball. He makes all these like great decisions. Here I am just like terrified of anything business related. And this guy's just got it all figured out and talks in numbers and leases and loans. And like, you didn't come out of the womb this way. I assume that this took time for you to learn like business lingo and like learn what you were doing and make mistakes. How much of being successful, like your success, do you feel like was just getting the wheels turning, taking that first step and like learning?
I think so much of it, to be honest with you. And it's so funny because your Instagram, your podcast, they don't really tell about the down and dirty stuff a lot of the time. Like, if we're being honest, my first 12 to 18 months, I probably lost not just on missed revenue, but like I wasted probably over $100,000 in business funds just trying to make poor decisions. My first year, I had a failed partnership that ruined the clinic's culture. You know, it took us about 8 months to get through and get our culture back. And, you know, that was me also trying to figure out how to be a boss to people. And I will say it's all through my failures, and I can write a book about it, dude. But the alternative is, and I see this happening, people are like, well, I need to go get an MBA first to be able to run a business. I'm like, I don't know. I have so many different opinions. I think the business is about accountability and leadership and communication, and that's so hard to learn from a book. You know, you can learn tactics and stuff too, but just getting in the weeds and being not afraid to just mess up and fall on your face and fall on your face in front of your team and your staff and your clients, but just be vulnerable and transparent about it. That's the kind of approach that I like personally for myself, and I've grown. You know, the numbers that I say now and stuff and all this, I had no idea what any of this stuff was. I still can barely read a P&L, but I have a really good CPA that goes through it every month with me. And so don't let that stuff hold you up. For me, I'd rather get started early in my life and work really hard and figure this out. So, and I will be honest with you, I think a big component to me is I was in high school during the 08 recession and everything. And so I saw my father was such a hardworking guy, he still is to this day, and he lost his job during that time and was in and out of startups and different companies over the next like 8 to 10 years. And you know, he did fine, but I saw that struggle, and he was always such a provider to us. And I don't know if I've like kind of materialized that with what I do now. It's like I'd rather work really hard at the beginning of my career and set up a business to where, you know, I can get dividends off of, or you know, run and be there for my family down the road instead of trying to do this during that time, or be, you know, in a position where I have to work when I'm 60 or 70 years old. That's a big motivator for me, but it kind of takes a little bit of sacrifice on the foreside of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's so good. I mean, I think like if I had to give somebody a formula for business success, I would say provide something of value, be able to, anything of value. So for me, it's student loan consults and advertising on our website for things like mortgages and financial planning. We started one of those firms that used to provide something of value. And then, so like for our listeners, it's probably the professional skill you learned in your education. So you got that down. And then just to try to initially kind of like give it away a little bit cheaper than you think it's worth to get that goodwill. And then to get the reviews, get people saying good things about you, build the reputation, like have people come in the door, which gets you reps. So you get faster, you get better, you can do something quicker. And then once you've got the speed and the quality, then you can raise prices a little bit and verify that the market will pay that. And then once you have enough of a margin to hire other people, you bring on somebody else and you try to have a system in place so that you can deliver that thing of value beyond just yourself, right? That's kind of like the basics of business. Like you said, for you, it's like treating people better, making people not have a miserable experience when they walk in the vet clinic, right?
You provide more value than what they paid for.
Yeah, that's consumer surplus in economics, right? That's Econ 101, is like the value somebody gets in excess of what they pay is consumer surplus. And honestly, like I think that like the more and more I look around like for service providers that I use, consumer surplus is not the norm. People are like by and large trying to just get away with doing as little as possible. And that's just like not smart business, right? Because like if you come out like you've done and provide excellent value to people, they will refer their friends. They will pay more because they're getting a more valuable service, right? I mean, I think that's just like a wonderful approach you've taken, because I looked up your clinic. You've got great reviews. You probably are very intentional about getting those reviews and delivering an experience, right? To make sure that people do have a good experience. I mean,
well, and there's things that you can do to like, you've niched down in yours and stuff. And when I open, there's things that you can do that force these interactions as well. And so, you know, I looked at our town and, you know, Monday through Friday, there's going to be 3 or 4 vet clinics open. Those 2 other vet clinics are going to also be open from 8 to 12 or 8 to 1 on Saturday. Then the town is closed on Sunday. And one of the biggest complaints I kind of heard from people in the community is like, there's no ER care here. And our town can't really, unfortunately, hold an ER or sustain that. So I was like, okay, well, what about this? What if I close on Saturday and I open on Sunday? And we capture that market there. And it's not a huge philosophical change. It's just, I also like doing fun things on Saturday and I can work on a Sunday. And I'll tell you, that was one of the biggest competitive edges we had, because we were the only non-ER clinic open in like probably a 30-mile radius, and kind of still to this day, that was open during our Sunday hours. And we were slammed from the moment we opened on Sundays. And then my theory was, if I can get them in the door and show them what we do here, they'll stay. And that provided true. It's like, they're like, whoa, we didn't know like a vet clinic could be like this. Okay, we're going to transfer and stuff too.
So what you're describing is provide something of value, but also try to minimize your competition. And like your cost of customer acquisition, because you're the only game in town, doesn't have to be that high, because it's just like you're the only game in town. Like I remember somebody was making, you know, several hundred thousand dollars a year doing just like very basic services. And I was like, well, what's the reason? And it turns out like they do a small little practice in like a rural part of Minnesota. And so in the winter, your options are get service at their clinic or nowhere, you know, like that's, those are the only choices. So in your case, like that's smart. Like it was just a 1 day a week thing. It wasn't like there wasn't competition, but you're really strategic in the way you presented your services at a specific time. And then you brought those people in and you held them in the door. So it's kind of like, that's like a, some people might call that a loss leader. It's not really a loss leader, but it'd be sort of like just a differentiator, right? And I think people don't think about that at all in business. Like they just think, oh, I'm just going to like look like every other practice. I'm going to open up. But like if you're going up against like all these like giant private equity owned corporations, like they're going to look so different from what you're going to be willing to do. Looking at your website, like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know. Did you just like find somebody that built that? It looks so good.
Yeah. Well, I hire out a company that manages all that, but I started just looking at different websites. Get outside your industry, man. Like don't get in your industry. All industries are just echo chambers. Everyone does the same thing. And so I started like looking at different websites that I really liked, different kind of MD offices, all those other things, just regular businesses. And, you know, I said, this is what I want. We spent like 4 or 5 months making it, but yeah, it's like, I want them to come there and be like, my first impression is like, oh, this is a little bit different. And so, you know, you think you get a dental on your dog and they go home and you get like a little baggie to send your meds home, right? It's like, well, how can we do that a little bit different? I got custom boxes that have like our Instagram on the side and it opens up and it says like proud pet parent in there. And it's horrible money, like horrible cost on those things. But people get it and be like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's a little bit different and stuff. And so they just start remembering you.
Well, it's like entertainment. It's like, I mean, like I looked at your website, I looked at the about page, like your team, and it's like a funny smiling puppy with like pink glasses or something like that. And I thought, you know, that is so smart because what it is like, you know, it's taking the drudgery of taking your dog to the vet and making it just from the website and probably with your services too, it's turning it into a fun experience instead of a miserable experience. It's just like a little bit of common sense created this thing that's life-changing for your local area because think about like your experience you described, right? Sounds miserable. Sounds awful. Taking my dog there to that clinic sounds like a terrible experience. And like, if I'm getting care from like a vet who's not an owner, they don't care to like try to fix the culture. Like that's not their job. It's the job of the owners. So you're effectively like craft beer in a world of Bud Light and Natty Light.
Yeah. And I think it's just also people just want to be treated like a human, right? You know, I think with what you've done is you've given away so much free knowledge all the time, you know, you with your weekly newsletters, you do all your blog posts and it's like, you go there and be like, hey, I'm really trying to help you. I'm not charging you for this right here. Like, if you want to take the next step, we can. And just being human and actually being owned up. When I have a client that's upset about something, you know, I get on the phone. I'm like, I totally get that. I would be so upset in that. Like, this is what happened here on our end. And thank you. And it always turns out fine and stuff too. But what was always funny to me when I go out in town and like go to a restaurant, I run into clients. It kind of irks me a little bit, right? They're like, oh, you provided such great medicine, or your surgery was so great that you did on my dog. They're always like, we just love coming to the clinic. Your staff is so fun and everyone's so kind there. I'm like, well, what about the medicine we did? But that's what they all say. And okay, that's really cool though, because that means we've created that environment too. It kind of made me mad. I was like, but I saved your dog's life cutting out its spleen. Like, what about that part? But you remember like the receptionist. I'm like, okay, that's even
better. Well, that goes back to like the study on lawsuits in medicine. And they just simply found like the only correlation to like, if you get sued was like bedside manner. Like you could even be like not that great of a doctor. And if you had a good bedside manner, your lawsuit rate was like way lower than their formula predicted. So I think what that says is just like, what that tells me is just like psychological need is actually like greater than a lot of like quantitative physical need, right? Like you said, people's desire to be treated like a human.
I've made a lot of mistakes, man. You know, just learning how to be a doctor and stuff. And not once have I been threatened to be sued because I own up to them if it's my mistake and I fix it too. And, you know, I had a buddy up in Maryland and he works for a corporation and there was a complication that happened during a procedure and I think the cat lost an eye or something and the corporate just squeezed up and lawyers got involved and they didn't let him talk to the owner and it escalated over weeks to lawyers getting involved on both sides and stuff. And he was like, can I just please just talk to the owners? And they're like, we do not advise that, blah, blah, blah. He actually went on his own volition and reached out and talked to the owner. And in 1 hour long phone call, cleared up everything. And now they're clients for life with him. And they just wanted to like hear from him and just talk through it with him and be real and be like, yes, like a mistake happened. I'm so sorry. And I will do what I can to fix it. And they dropped everything, every single thing. you know, that's such a big lesson to me. It's like a dentist, a buddy of mine, his dad's a dentist in Austin. And he was like, look, you just do what you should do. If you forget to pull a tooth or something happens, like, I get them right back in. I will fix it. I'm not going to charge you. You know, we'll hug at the end of that. And I had a lady, I remember the first year I opened, it was this tiny little mouth and I missed a tooth. It was way in the back and I didn't see it. It was a rotten tooth. And the lady called me like crying about a year or a week later. She was like, there's a rotten tooth in there and you missed it. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so, so sorry. Like, let's come back and look at it. And they watched the whole second procedure. I comped everything, of course. And I was like, yeah, you're right. And I looked in the mouth and I was like, yeah. And she was like, oh my gosh, I would have missed that too. She like looked in the mouth as well and then left a 5-star review after that stuff. And so, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. I think as doctors, you feel like you can never like show weakness or show that you failed or messed up, but that's all they're asking.
Well, people have this kind of human reaction of throw my guard up, defensiveness. It's like, are you trying to rip me off? Are you trying to screw me over? Like, that's everybody's kind of like natural, like caution. And then when you show like, no, we're on the same team, like I want what you want, it just totally changes the tables around, right?
One of the most influential books that I've read, and it's a really bad title, but it's Dale Carnegie, right? It's like How to Win Friends and Influence People. And they talk about just reducing those barriers and stuff too. And it's like, if you have someone that's upset with you, a lot of times there's validity to this. Of course, you're going to have that oddity that's just, you cannot make anybody happy or they're just off the wall on something. But, you know, for me, it's what I said earlier. I go like, hey, I would be really upset and I agree with you. And then they're like, well, if you agree with me, I can't argue with you. And then you're like, okay, now let's work through it and stuff. That's just human nature too.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this has been so helpful for our listeners. You know, I guess maybe a final thought for them. Somebody's listening to this. She wants to start a practice, maybe do a startup or acquisition, but she's just so nervous. What one bit of advice would you give her to just take a chance, bet on herself, start the practice, do the partnership, whatever? What would you say?
Honestly, start asking questions and don't be afraid to get rejected. I will tell you, that's honestly what led me down this hole, is I would just start reaching out to people and asking like, hey, how did you do this? Like, what steps did you do? And you'd be so surprised how many doors that opens. Because it's the fear of the unknown. Like every vet student, I always tell them, you reach out to me anytime. Like I give them my cell phone, reach out to me on Instagram. We'll talk through it. And then before we know it, I've connected them with different bankers and options and CPAs and stuff too. But you just never know what that next conversation is going to lead to. It's like how I started this loan here in Texas is I called my drug rep. And I was like, hey, what drugs do I need to start a clinic? He's like, I don't know, but why don't you talk to this person next? And then I kept going down the line and then I got a loan and stuff. So you just ask first and do not be afraid if someone's like, no, I'm not going to tell you. That's okay. There's, I guarantee you, a ton of people that have been through it that want to share their knowledge, but they don't really have an outlet and they have a passion for it. Like my passion is practice ownership now. And I will help any vet that wants that to my ability to do that. But you got to ask too. I can't read your mind.
Well, I hope you've inspired a generation of practice owners in dental, medical, veterinary.
I hope so, man. We got to fight back somehow.
Well, it's just like, yeah, do you want corporate medicine to own the world? I mean, listen, I have no problem with people doing corporate medicine. I think it's great. But I think that a healthy world is a place where you've got the giant, big, here's your Big Mac kind of places. And then you've got the mom and pop spot in the corner. The whole town absolutely loves it. It is just like the gem of the community. And, you know, the listener can be the person that provides that for your community. You can be the person that is the hero in your story, that is the cornerstone of your community, the person that people look to and admire and just think, thank goodness that person lives here. The listener that's excited about it, if you made it to this point in this podcast, I'm assuming people are interested in business ownership, right? You deserve to be that, and you deserve to bet on yourself like you did, and it's probably achieve, I would say, with 95% certainty or greater, you'll achieve financial success like you know, beyond your wildest dreams. Maybe not quite as good as you, because you are definitely an outlier. But
well, no, and I know people are doing 1,000 times better than I am, so it's not worth to compare.
Well, that's the thing, is there's always people above the ladder and below the ladder. No matter where you are, there's always somebody to reach up, and there's always, you know, somebody above you. And so you can't, that's why the Bible warns, thou shalt not covet. I like to kind of like joke about that, is because it's like it destroys joy, and you forget about just you. Be you, right? Be you.
Yeah.
Do what you're good at. Be who you are. Don't try to be more or less. The biggest obstacle to success is if you hadn't taken that random bit of advice several years ago and just decided this is what I needed. This is the permission I needed to bet on myself and to take action. And that, you know, the biggest obstacle to that success would have been inaction. So it's not knowing this financial statements. It's not hiring the right team. It's, you know, yeah, do those things, but like take the action and you won't regret it.
I think one of the most insane stats to me, and I'll leave this because I think this is a good thing, mainly for my vet friends listening, is the default rate of a veterinary practice is less than 2%, which is absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. So why would you never take a 98% success rate bet? Like, come on.
Yeah. And for medical and dental, it's less than 1%. And the veterinary medicine, you know, it's a discretionary purchase, right? So it's not required to live. Like, you don't have to save your dog or cat's life to live. And so there is a little bit of discretionary nature to it. But like you said, take advantage of that, like lemonade out of lemons, right? Like, you don't have to worry about HIPAA. I do not want to be accused of our vet clients of not caring for patients, right? But if a cat loses an eye, I think most people would agree that that's different than if a human loses an eye.
As of now, it is, yeah.
Yeah, but whatever advantages you have, what I mean by that, veterinarians, before I get hate mail.
Well, the barrier to entry is much lower, right? Because we don't have to deal with a lot of that. Of course, we love our patients.
Well, it's a unique opportunity because you couldn't, as a doctor, a medical doctor for humans, right? You're not going to be doing generalist care and ophthalmology, you know what I mean? If you're in a community where, you know, it's like San Francisco, yeah, you probably won't compete with a veterinary ophthalmologist. But if you're in a more out-of-the-way place, if the other alternative is they drive, what, probably 2 hours to like a veterinary ophthalmologist or something like that, like you can do some of those procedures and it's okay because you're providing a valuable service and you're the best option for miles for the care they need. And that's probably, if I had to summarize where I've seen people be wildly successful in the years I've done Student Loan Planner with consulting for thousands of people, it's people that provide exceptional human care that would be hard to find elsewhere. You know, that means if you're in a community where it's easy to find that care elsewhere because it's super saturated, well, that's okay. If you have to live there, make the best out of it.
My CPA says, you know, a big driver of like early success is location and pricing. You know, it's not necessarily having very unique services and stuff, what she sees. And she's a veterinary startup specific CPA. So it's interesting.
Well, we could go on for hours. You know, if people want to follow, maybe like, what do you think? Instagram, what's your best place people should follow you?
Yeah, that's right. I'm a millennial, man. I live on Instagram. So mine is dr.mikewalker. Very simple. So you can DM me on there. I'm a pretty open book.
Well, I'm so grateful that you reached out. Other people that have maybe had crazy success from something random that I said years ago, please reach out because we'd love to feature you and really, you know, inspire our listeners with super successful stories like you. So, Mike, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.